Welcome to another episode of Jamaican Sound System Culture. On today's episode, we are featuring Hedley Jones, the man who built the amplifier that started it all. If you are not following us, we would be honored if you would consider doing so. It costs you nothing to hit that button so that you will be notified every time we release a new episode. Now, let's get into it. There is a night in Kingston that nobody photographed. No newspaper sent a reporter. No radio announcer made note of it. A man stood outside his shop on King Street, downtown Kingston, with a machine he had built with his own hands. And he pressed play, and the bass moved through the street like something alive. People stopped, not because a performance had been announced, not because there was a poster or a price of admission. They stopped because they had never felt sound like that before in their lives, and they did not yet have a name for what they were hearing. The man standing at that machine was Hedley H.G. Jones. The year was 1947, and the amplifier that started it all was running for the first time. Here is what almost nobody tells you. The entire architecture of Jamaican sound system culture, every clash, every dub plate, every selector, every lawn dance from West Kingston to Notting Hill, from the Bronx to Toronto, from Studio One to every dance hall stage that came after, every note of ska, rocksteady, reggae, and dancehall that traveled from a tiny island into the bloodstream of the world, all of it runs on a piece of engineering that one man designed in a small shop on King Street. And that man spent most of his life without the credit his invention deserved. His name was Hedley Jones, and this is how it began. He was born on the 12th of November, 1917, in St. Catherine, Jamaica. The island was still a British colony. The roads outside Kingston were rough. The parishes outside of the capital moved at a slower, harder pace. Jones grew up in a Jamaica where the divide between those who had access to culture and those who did not was drawn by class, by race, and by geography. The music that came through the colonial radio stations was curated for a certain kind of listener. Live music at proper venues cost money that working people in Kingston did not routinely have. The community had music inside it, but the formal apparatus for delivering that music back to the community was not built for them. Jones was not thinking about any of that yet. He was thinking about electronics. From an early age, he was drawn to how things worked, how current moved through a circuit, how a signal could be captured, shaped, and reproduced. He built instruments with his own hands. At some point around 1940, before the war changed everything, he designed and built one of the first solid-bodied electric guitars in Jamaica. He built the pickup himself because he could not afford to buy one. And because he could not afford to buy one, he had to understand exactly how one worked. That discipline, the discipline of a man who builds what he cannot buy, and in doing so understands it more completely than anyone who simply purchased it. That discipline was going to shape the next three decades of Jamaican cultural history. Then the war came. Jones enlisted. He trained as a radar engineer. He left Jamaica on the 8th of May, 1944, and served with the British Royal Air Force in Europe. He was specific about the date because the war in Europe ended exactly 1 year later, on the 8th of May, 1945. He remembered the symmetry of it. He had gone to war the day the world would eventually mark as victory. He came back changed, and he came back with knowledge. Radar engineering was not a simple trade. It required a deep understanding of frequency, signal behavior, amplification, and the physics of how waves move through space. Jones had spent his war years inside that science, and when he walked back into Jamaica in the late 1940s, he walked back in as a man who understood sound and electricity at a level that almost nobody else on the island could match. He opened Bop City. The shop sat on King Street in downtown Kingston. He sold radios. He repaired equipment. He imported records, jazz from the United States, Cuban rhythms that move people differently than the stiff orchestral programming coming through the colonial broadcast channels. He played them in the store. People came in. They listened. They bought. But Jones had a problem, or more precisely, he had an opportunity that he recognized as a problem first. The equipment available to play music in public spaces was designed for voice. It was designed for announcements, for speeches, for the narrow frequency range of a human speaking clearly in a meeting hall. When you ran music through a public address system in the 1940s, what came back was thin and harsh and hollow. The bass frequencies that gave music its physical weight, the low end that made a rhythm section feel like something your body responded to rather than your mind evaluated, simply disappeared. The system was not built to carry it. Jones wrote about this himself, and his words are worth sitting with. He said, "The public address system prior to World War II was designed to electronically respond to a limited range of audio frequencies, covering voice and general purposes. A Jamaican sound system was designed to respond with low surface noise, low distortion, and high fidelity over the complete audio range of frequencies from 15 Hz to 20 kHz, a huge technological difference. Before that era, noisy PA systems were the norm." He was not writing a manifesto. He was explaining an engineering problem he had already solved. The Jones Model High Fidelity Audio Amplifier of 1947 was something the world had not heard on a street corner before. He imported two 18-inch English Celestion bass woofers and half a dozen 12-inch heavy-duty speakers. He mounted the woofers in bass reflex cabinets that he constructed himself. He designed an amplifier running two RCA 807 power pentodes in a 120-watt Class AB push-pull output configuration. He built a preamplifier section around active filters that split the audio frequency spectrum into three overlapping components, bass, mid-range, and treble, each running through parallel connected double triode cathode followers with individual volume controls. He had built, without calling it that, without anyone yet having a name for it, the modern split-spectrum active filter equalizer. The sound that came out of those cabinets was not like anything Kingston had heard outdoors. Bass frequencies that a public address system would have swallowed whole came through clean and full and physical. You felt it in your chest before you processed it in your mind. On King Street, outside Bop City, when Jones played records through that machine, the air around the shop changed. The amplifier that started it all was not built to change the world. It was built to sell records. Jones wanted to draw people to Bop City. He put the machine outside the shop and played jazz and Cuban records through it and watched what happened. What happened was that people gathered. Not customers exactly, people. The street became a place. The music had been freed from the room and given to the community outside, and the community understood immediately that something new had arrived, even if they did not have the language for it yet. This is the part of the story where most tellings move on quickly. They note the amplifier, acknowledge the innovation, and rush forward to the clashes and the famous names. But slow down here, because what Jones had done in 1947 was not simply a technical achievement. He had answered a question that Kingston's working communities had been living with for years without consciously asking it. The question was, where is the music for us? Colonial Kingston in the late 1940s was a city of sharp divisions. Uptown had its clubs, its venues, its organized social events, its access to live performance and recorded music in proper settings. Downtown Kingston, the neighborhoods that press close to the harbor, the yards and lanes of West Kingston, and the surrounding parishes where working people lived, had none of that formal apparatus. The colonial broadcast channels played what they chose to play. The dance venues that existed were not designed for or priced for the people who needed them most. Music existed in the community, in the yards, in the churches, in the spontaneous gatherings that happened wherever people found space to breathe. But a system, a proper system, a machine that could deliver the full weight of recorded music into an open outdoor space so that a community could gather around it and feel it together, that did not yet exist. Headley Jones built it. He built it to sell records. And then something happened that he did not plan. The community arrived, not just at Bop City, not just on King Street. Word moved through the neighborhoods the way it always has in Kingston, fast and specific and personal. Did you hear what they have down at that shop? Not a radio, not a gramophone, something else. Something that makes the bass come out like a physical thing. People came to hear it. Street parties formed without being organized. The machine had created a gravity, and the community had already felt it and was already moving towards it. It was around this time that a man named Tom Wong walked into Bop City. He walked in with cash in hand. Tom Wong was a Chinese-Jamaican entrepreneur who was well known in Kingston as an organizer of events and dances. He understood what Jones had built. He understood it better, perhaps, than Jones himself understood the social implications of it. Wong bought an amplifier from Jones, and then Tom Wong did something that Jones had not done. He named it. He called it a sound system. Jones himself recalled this moment with precision. He said, "Wong showed up at my store to buy an amplifier, cash in hand. So I built an amplifier for Tom. He promptly called it a sound system. Two words, sound system. And the name fits so exactly. And the concept it described was so complete that it stuck the moment it was spoken and has never been replaced. Tom Wong took Jones's amplifier, loaded it onto a truck with a generator and turntables and the speakers Jones had built, and drove it into the streets of Kingston and held dances and called the whole apparatus, the machine and the music and the experience and the community it created, a sound system. Tom Wong named his system Tom the Great Sebastian after a trapeze performer from Barnum and Bailey Circus. The name was theatrical and deliberate. Wong understood spectacle. He understood that a sound system was not merely a machine, but a performance, a presentation, an event with identity and personality. By around 1950, Tom the Great Sebastian was widely regarded as the leading sound system of its day, and it ran on Headley Jones's engineering. Jones had given the invention to the culture. The culture had given it a name and a community. And now the community was about to give it something else, rivalry. Because here is the thing about a sound system: once it becomes a community institution, once a neighborhood recognizes its sound, once the people who gather around those boxes on a Saturday night feel that this machine is theirs, that this music belongs to their street, their parish, their community, the idea of another sound threatening that belonging becomes something personal. The competition between sound systems was never simply about music. It was about identity, about pride, about which community's machine could carry the most weight, hold the largest crowd, and command the most respect on the lawn. And the men who wanted to run that kind of power started coming to Headley Jones. Not long after Tom the Great Sebastian established its dominance, a man named Arthur Reed came looking for a sound system of his own. Arthur Reed was not a quiet man. He was known in Kingston as a figure of force and presence. A man who had been a police officer, who carried himself with the authority of someone who had learned that authority was a tool, and who now ran a liquor shop on Bond Street. He called himself Duke Reed. He called himself the Trojan. In 1953, Duke Reed launched Reed Sound System. He came to Headley Jones. Jones built him what he needed: the amplifiers, the speaker cabinets, the engineering that would put Duke Reed's voice and Duke Reed's music into the streets of Kingston with the kind of power that made crowds stop in their tracks and rivals look at each other with quiet unease. Duke Reed was theatrical about his system in a way that had nothing gentle in it. He would arrive at dances wearing a crown, a cape, guns holstered at his hips, an orb in his hand. He was performing power for an audience that understood power, that lived with it, and feared it, and respected it in the specific way that West Kingston understood respect. And under all of that performance was Headley Jones's engineering, pushing bass through the night air at a frequency and a clarity that set Reed's sound apart from everything else on the lawn. Tom the Great Sebastian had been the first, but Duke Reed's Trojan, backed by Jones's amplifiers, pushed sound system culture into a new register. Reed's energy and showmanship and the sheer force of the system he ran drew crowds that Tom Wong had never seen. The rivalry between them was loud and specific and communal. You were not simply choosing which dance to attend. You were declaring something about yourself, about which community you belong to, about which machine spoke for you. And then, a third man entered the picture. Clement Dodd, a young man from West Kingston who had traveled to the United States as a migrant farm worker and came back having heard American rhythm and blues in a way that changed what he thought music was supposed to do. He set up a sound system of his own and called himself Sir Coxon Downbeat. Dodd came to Headley Jones. Jones built for Dodd as well. The man who had built Tom the Great Sebastian's amplifiers, who had built Duke Reed's Trojan, now built for Coxon Dodd. Jones was not playing sides. He was not a man of allegiances in the sound system wars that were beginning to take shape in Kingston. He was an engineer. He built for whoever came to him with the need and the means. But what this means, historically, is that the three most important sound systems of the foundational era of Jamaican music, the three operators who between them would generate the cultural conditions that produce ska, rocksteady, reggae, and dancehall, all of them ran on Headley Jones technology. The amplifier that started it all was running in three directions at once. In the neighborhoods of Kingston, the lawn dances that these systems powered were becoming something bigger than parties. Think about who showed up to a sound system dance in the early 1950s in West Kingston. Not the uptown set, not the formal social class that attended staged events in proper venues. The people who packed onto those lawns on a Saturday night were the people the colonial economy had pushed to the edges of participation in their own culture. They were the people whose music the radio stations refused to play with consistency and respect. They were working people, market sellers, laborers, the young men and women who had come in from the countryside looking for work and found instead the density and precarity of downtown Kingston life. Think about what it meant to hear a sound system for the first time if you were that person. A boy from Denham Town who had never been inside a proper dance venue, who had grown up hearing music through a neighbor's small radio that picked up the broadcast signal on good nights and lost it on bad ones, standing 30 feet from a set of House of Joy speaker cabinets on a Saturday night, with the bass moving through his chest and a selector dropping a tune that the radio had never played. He did not need anyone to explain to him that this machine was different. He felt it before he thought it. The sound system was not delivering music to him. It was delivering recognition. It was saying, "This is yours. This space. This music. This gathering, this is for you." The yard and the lane and the dusty lawn with the generator still running and the smell of rum and cigarette smoke in the August heat. That was the venue that belonged to the people the formal venues had excluded. And Headley Jones had built the machine that made it possible. Now here is the thread that runs through this story and does not get resolved easily. Jones gave the culture its foundation. He built for Tom Wong. He built for Duke Reed. He built for Coxon Dodd. His engineering ran under every major development in the first decade of Jamaican sound system history. And yet his name is not the name that most people reach for when they talk about the origins of the culture. Ask someone who started Jamaican sound system culture, and they will say Tom the Great Sebastian, or Duke Reed, or Coxon Dodd. They will not say Headley Jones. Why? This is the question that lives at the center of this story. Not because the answer is simple, but because the shape of the question tells you something important about how cultural history is made and who gets written into it and who gets left in the workshop behind the names that become famous. Hold that question. Because the answer, when it arrives, is going to reframe everything you have heard so far. The rivalry between Duke Reed and Coxon Dodd through the 1950s became one of the defining tensions in Jamaican cultural history. Both systems ran powerful. Both selectors understood what their crowds needed and how to deliver it. Both operators had the kind of personality that turned a sound system into an institution rather than simply a machine. Reed was all force and spectacle, and the kind of physical dominance that made a crowd feel the danger of crossing him. Dodd was subtler. Dodd listened differently. Dodd moved through the music with a selector's intelligence and found the tune that Reed had not played, the record that had come in last week that nobody else knew about, and dropped it at the moment when the crowd needed something new. Both of them needed better equipment than their rivals had. Both of them came back to Hedley Jones. Jones was not building for the rivalry. He was building for the music. He was still operating as an engineer. He still ran Bop City. He still repaired equipment and sold records and played jazz and Cuban rhythms through his own system on King Street. He had, without entirely intending to, become the most important technical figure in a cultural movement that was growing faster than anyone had predicted, and that was beginning to shape the entire social fabric of Kingston street life. Sound system dances by the mid-1950s had replaced live music as the primary form of community entertainment across large parts of Kingston. The economics of it were clear. A live band required multiple musicians, instruments, rehearsal time, and coordination. A sound system required one operator, one selector, boxes and amplifiers and records, and a generator. You could reach more people at lower cost, more regularly, and you could take the dance to the community rather than requiring the community to come to a venue. The sound system was democratic in a way that live venues were structurally unable to be. Jones understood this. He had been watching it happen from King Street. He had seen the machine he built to sell records become the engine of a community cultural life that had no other comparable vehicle, and he kept building. The House of Joy speaker cabinets that Jones designed were enormous. Wardrobe-sized structures built to project sound across an open lawn with the kind of clarity and volume that a standard public address system could never match. The name was partly technical description, partly something closer to a declaration. A house, a place where joy lived. Jones was an engineer who understood that the thing he was building was not simply a device. It was a vessel. By the late 1950s, the sound systems Jones had helped build were beginning to generate something the operators had not initially intended. Demand for music that did not exist on imported American records. The rhythm and blues records coming in from the United States had been the foundation of the sound system culture from its beginning. But supply was unpredictable. Import costs were real. And as the rivalry between operators intensified, the competitive edge shifted from simply having the best equipment to having the record nobody else had. The dub plate era had not yet formally arrived, but the hunger for exclusive music was already driving operators toward local recording. Clement Dodd felt this first and acted on it most decisively. He began recording Jamaican musicians and pressing the results onto acetate for his sound system. In doing so, he created a direct line between the sound system and the recording studio. The machine that had been used to play imported American records began producing its own music. Jamaican music, music made specifically for the texture and the frequency requirements of Jones's amplifiers and speaker cabinets. Music that understood bass in the way that Jones had taught the island to hear it. This is not incidental to the story of ska. This is the story of ska. The early recordings that Coxon Dodd made in the late 1950s and early 1960s. The sessions that produced the first truly Jamaican commercial music. Those sessions were produced for playback through sound systems. The frequencies were shaped for Jones's engineering. The bass lines that would define Jamaican music for the next half century were written for cabinets that Jones had built. Ska was not born in a vacuum. It was born in the context of a sound system culture that Jones had made technically possible. and it was shaped by the sonic expectations of audiences who had been listening to Jones's amplifiers for more than a decade. And then came the commission that closed the circle. In the early 1960s, Clement Dodd was ready to build a proper recording studio. He had found a location on Brentford Road in Kingston. He knew what he needed. He went to Hedley Jones. Jones built the equipment for Studio One. Think about that sentence. The man who built the amplifier that started the sound system culture in 1947 built the equipment for the studio that would become the most important recording facility in Jamaican music history, Studio One, the location where Bob Marley recorded early sessions, where Toots and the Maytals recorded, where Alton Ellis recorded, where the Skatalites rehearsed and cut their rhythms, where the foundations of Jamaican popular music as an internationally recognized genre were laid down. The equipment in that building was built by the same hands that had built the machine on King Street. Jones was not a peripheral figure who got lucky at the beginning and then faded from the story. Jones was the engineering spine of the entire development. He was present at the beginning, present through the rivalry years, and present at the moment when the sound system culture transformed itself into a recording industry. Now let the silence speak for a moment, because there is a silence in this history that the community has never fully resolved. Jones built for everyone. He was not a partisan in the sound system wars. He did not choose sides between Duke Reed and Coxone Dodd the way the communities around those systems chose sides. He was the man both sides came to when they needed better equipment. He was the man who made their competition possible by making both of them excellent. And because he stood outside the rivalries, because he was not the name on the truck, or the voice on the microphone, or the face in the crowd, because he was in the workshop while the dances were happening on the lawn, his name did not travel with the music the way the operators' names traveled. The sound system culture does not remember its engineers the way it remembers its selectors. It does not build mythologies around the man who built the box the way it builds mythologies around the man who dropped the tune. This is not unique to Jamaica. It is a pattern in every popular music culture in the world. The technician who makes the art possible disappears behind the art, and the art becomes the story, while the technician becomes a footnote. Hedley Jones became a footnote to a story he had started. But here is what the footnote contains. Jones did not stop. He kept building. He kept repairing. He kept running Bop City. He kept contributing to Kingston's technical infrastructure in ways that had nothing to do with music. In 1952, he and his cousin Stephen designed and built Jamaica's first traffic lights, following the chaos that Hurricane Charlie had brought to the island's roads. He did not build the traffic lights because he was famous. He built them because he saw a problem and had the knowledge to solve it. That was Hedley Jones. He was not a performer. He was a builder. His identity was in the thing he made, not in the recognition he received for making it. The 1960s became the era in which the sound system culture Jones had technically fathered grew into something that reached beyond Jamaica's shores. The Windrush generation had been carrying sound system culture to Britain since the late 1940s and early 1950s. And by the early 1960s, Jamaican communities in cities like London, Birmingham, and Nottingham had their own sound system scenes, built on the same principles, the same speaker cabinet designs, the same frequency philosophy that Jones had established in Kingston. The bass that moved through the streets of Brixton on a Saturday night was the direct descendant of the bass that had moved through King Street in 1947. In New York, in Toronto, in cities across North America, where Jamaican communities had settled, the same transmission was happening. The sound system traveled with the people who needed it. It rebuilt itself in every city it arrived in. And everywhere it arrived, the technical philosophy at its heart was the philosophy Hedley Jones had established. Split the frequencies. Give the bass room to breathe. Build the cabinet for the crowd, not for the room. A young man in the South Bronx in the early 1970s would eventually stand in a park in the Bronx with a sound system inspired by the Jamaican tradition, loop a drum break across two turntables, and call to practice DJing. His name was Cool Herc. He had grown up in Kingston before his family moved to the Bronx, and he brought with him the sound system culture he had absorbed as a child. The party in Sedgwick Avenue in 1973, where Cool Herc and Cindy Campbell threw the first event that hip-hop historians mark as the beginning of that culture, ran on a technical philosophy traceable directly back to King Street. The amplifier that started it all had a very long reach. Jones kept building quietly through the decades, while the culture his invention had generated grew into an international institution. He was not bitter. The interviews and writings that survive from his later years do not carry the tone of a man who felt cheated. They carry the tone of a man who understood exactly what he had built, who was clear-eyed about the history, and who felt that the documentation mattered even if the fame had not arrived. He wrote about the 1947 amplifier with precision. He described the engineering choices. He explained the reasoning. He wrote it down because he understood that without the written record, the history would be told without him, and it largely was. In 2011, the Musgrave Gold Medal arrived. The Musgrave Gold Medal is Jamaica's highest civilian award for distinguished eminence. The Institute of Jamaica awards it for contribution to art, science, or public service at a level the island recognizes as foundational. Jones received it for distinguished eminence in the field of music. He was 93 years old. There is something in the timing that demands acknowledgement. He had built the amplifier 64 years before the medal arrived. He had built Duke Reed's Trojan more than 50 years before. He had built Studio One's equipment nearly 50 years before. The culture he had technically fathered had grown into a global institution, had influenced genres on every continent, had seeded an entire tradition of popular music from ska, through dancehall, through hip-hop, and he received formal recognition at 93. The community gave him what it had. He accepted it with the same quiet clarity he had brought to everything else. He was still alive when the island finally settled into understanding what he had done. He was still talking to researchers, still giving interviews, still writing about the 1947 amplifier with the precision of a man who had never stopped thinking about how things work. In 2017, the Red Bull Music Academy published a long interview with him. He was 99 years old. His mind was clear. He talked about the RAF. He talked about King Street. He talked about Tom Wong walking in with cash in hand. He talked about the engineering choices with the specificity of someone who had made them yesterday, not 70 years before. On the 1st of September, 2017, Hedley H.G. Jones died. He was 99 years old. He had lived long enough to see the culture he started become the dominant global influence on popular music production. He had lived long enough to hear dubstep, which is Jamaican-based philosophy, run through British electronics. He had lived long enough to hear hip-hop, which is Jamaican sound system practice transplanted to American soil. He had lived long enough to see the speaker cabinet designs he pioneered become the standard against which every live sound reinforcement system in the world was measured. He had lived long enough to see that what he built in 1947 had not simply started something. It had started everything. And the community held his passing in a specific silence that was not absence. It was the silence of a culture that knows what it owes, but does not always know how to say it. The Jamaica Observer published his passage. The Wire in the United Kingdom published an obituary. Researchers and historians who had spent careers in Jamaican music wrote about his death with the urgency of people who knew a primary source had just closed. The people who had been building sound systems for 50 years and who had learned the frequency philosophy without ever hearing his name understood, in the way that community knowledge sometimes works, that something irreplaceable had left the island. The selector who had known Jones personally retired a record that evening without explaining why. The operators who had built their own systems on Jones's principles kept building. The culture did not stop. It never stops. But for one evening, in rooms and yards across Kingston, in the communities where the sound had always lived, there was a moment of quiet that was not emptiness. It was recognition. The amplifier that started it all had been switched off for the last time. But here is the answer to the question planted at the beginning of this story. Why does almost nobody know Hedley Jones when every sound, every clash, every genre that followed ran on his engineering? Because the culture he built was bigger than any individual. Because the sound system, once it left King Street and entered the community, became the community's. And the community does not always carry the engineer's name alongside the music. Because the selector becomes the story, and the man who built the box becomes the foundation that everyone stands on without looking down. Because Jones himself was not a performer, was not a clash warrior, was not a persona or a brand, and the culture remembers its performers first. But the deeper answer is this. Jones understood this about himself, and he built anyway. He wrote it down anyway. He gave the interview at 99 anyway. He did not withhold the engineering because recognition had been slow. He did not take the knowledge with him. He left it where it could be found, in his words, in the machines he built, in the frequency philosophy that every sound system engineer who came after him was working from, whether they knew it or not. The man who gave the world the amplifier that started it all was not diminished by the silence around his name. The silence was the culture's failure, not his. And the culture, when it finally looks squarely at its own beginning, finds him there on King Street in 1947, with bass moving through the street like something alive, and nobody yet having a name for what they were hearing. They have a name now. Sound system. Hedley Jones built it. That was the story of Hedley Jones, the man who built the amplifier that started it all. If this episode moved you, if it taught you something, if it kept you up, share it. Follow us if you have not already, and stay close, because on the next episode of Jamaican Sound System Culture, we are going somewhere you are not ready for.